I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome into a new episode of The Memo on this Wednesday, the 24th of August. Brad Locke here with you. W. Derek Russell is not. He said he would be.
No, he's not. It's me.
It's Lauren. Lauren Wood.
Hi,
better.
Everyone.
Yep.
No. What? Better?
Yes. Better.
Much better. Photographer extraordinaire for the Daily Journal / videographer. You do video as well. Mm-hmm. Add that to your title.
Yeah.
How you been? Hadn't been in here
good
lately hosting.
I haven't. I've been busy.
What's been doing?
Catching Pokemon.
Just catching Pokemon right now on the podcast.
Are there any Pokemon in here?
There's a Pidgey
in the studio.
I hate Pidgeys.
Get the Pod Gator.
Where?
Need to kill this thing. There we go, Pod Gator.
Mm-hmm. Is it on Brad's head?
No. I don't do that because it wastes battery.
We need to get the exterminators in here, get these Pidgeys out.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
Mm. Yeah,
I haven't gotten onto the Pokemon phenomenon, mostly because I've hated it since it came out in the late 90s.
Oh.
90s? Yeah.
I was like 10 or 11 when it came out, so I played it on my Game Boy when I was like 10 and loved it. And then I had the Pokemon trading cards.
You're 10. My son is into Pokemon. So, he's 12. So, yeah, it's an age thing at first.
Yeah.
And I'm sure for people your age, it's a kind of a nostalgia thing.
A lot of people that play it are like 25 and up.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, my cousins play it, and he's a senior in high school. And my other cousin, she's 20.
I've seen people of all ages play it.
Mm-hmm.
People in their 60s.
I've seen even little ones playing it, like 6-year-olds at Fair Park.
It's funny.
Uh-huh, it is.
I don't know. It's just for some reason, back in the late 90s, we had like one kid, and she was really small, Deanna. And so she didn't have anything. She didn't watch Pokemon or nothing. But I don't know what it is. I would see it, though. And I just, something about anime in general, I don't like. I can't explain it.
Yeah.
I guess I have bad
taste.
To
each their own.
But I just.
See, I played, I watched the show a little bit, but I played the game more than I watched the show.
Okay.
I did watch the show, though. Nerd alert.
I watched SpongeBob back then.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was in college when SpongeBob came out. That was a long time ago,
too.
That's how old I am.
Yeah.
But I got into it. And still,
you got into SpongeBob.
I love SpongeBob. I'm still a huge SpongeBob fan.
I'm sorry.
It's been on the air for like, 17, 18 years?
A long time.
I mean, it's going to end up being like the next Simpsons as far as longevity. I just don't think that guy's going to do anything else. Why would he?
Yeah, that's true.
He's got a good thing going. That's all they play.
Simpsons are still on the air.
Huh?
Simpsons are as old as I am.
I know. I haven't watched them in years. I used to, but
yeah.
I don't know how you can do something for that long. You gotta
and
be really
still
good.
Be creative.
New material, yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That would be so hard.
And I mean, I don't know if The Simpsons is still funny, but SpongeBob is.
you can vouch for that.
Yeah.
You do have small children.
What?
You do have small children.
I do, and we'll quote
you don't just, like, watch SpongeBob for the fun of it.
I mean, I would watch it by myself. You know, don't get me wrong. My wife hates it. She hates SpongeBob.
You either love it or you hate it.
Yeah.
There's no in between.
There's really not.
Guessing SpongeBob. Lauren hates it.
I mean, I used to watch it when I was a kid.
Back when you watched Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were like
SpongeBob.
10 when it came out.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But me and my kids will quote SpongeBob at each other all the time. It's great. Yeah. But you, Chris, you into the SpongeBob?
Chris is judging you.
Daniel
is silently
Daniel
judging
like
you.
The SpongeBob?
Probably. Not really. He hadn't really gotten into SpongeBob.
He likes Disney.
He's huge into Disney.
Oh, boy.
Daniel has a refined palate.
Sure.
He likes Disney and Pixar movies.
Yeah, I've had to put up with the Disney Channel for years.
You just said,
I'll be honest.
Movies.
No, Disney movies are fine.
He's a Scrooge.
I'm going to leave.
The Disney Channel, on the other hand,
is not okay
with me.
Oh, and I'm not comparing them.
Oh, I know. The movies are fine. It's the channel. Most of the shows on that channel are just, you know, not.
Disney.
I mean, they're not aimed
Junior.
For me, obviously, but I've seen much better children's programming / teenage programming.
The teenage program is where it gets annoying.
Yes. See, back in the day, they had like Lizzie McGuire. That was a good show.
Yeah.
I watched the heck out of that show.
Yeah.
They don't have those kind of shows
and
anymore.
All the Disney Channel original movies. Classics.
If you say so.
Okay. Fine. Agree and disagree. Okay.
Anyway, we have a show to do today.
Before we delve into more.
Now that
weird
we've talked about Pokemon
culture,
and SpongeBob. Gotten that out of the way. We've got Zach Orsborn coming on the show to talk about rural internet and the issues that people living out in the boonies have, basically. Kind of take it for granted living in Tupelo.
Oh, yeah. Well, even people in Tupelo, Ellie moved to her new place and cannot get U-verse internet. Yep.
Well, I've got Comcast. It's pretty good. And we also got Michaela Morris coming on to talk about the 30th anniversary of the North Mississippi Medical Center Women's Hospital. I've patronized that place a couple of times.
Yes.
Including very recently.
18 times?
Well, no. We only had two kids here in Tupelo. And we're going to get Bobby Harrison on the satellite phone or the cell phone, whatever. Walkie-talkie. I'm going to get him to talk about the budget hearings going on in the state capitol. Tate Reeves with some questions for the Department of Health. Interesting story there. And, of course, Jenna Parsons. It's Wednesday, so Jenna's going to come talk to us about food.
Yep.
Speaking of food, I'm chowing down on a Pop-Tart right now.
I kind of wish I had class. A Pop-Tart.
It's kind of sad. Thing is, I don't like Pop-Tarts.
What?
I know. I mean, they're okay, some of them, but
you're so picky.
Well, when I grew up, I mean, God bless my mom, but you know, we had to scrimp because my dad decided to go to seminary in his 40s. So, you know, he was doing that while delivering the Jackson Daily News. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we didn't have a ton of money, so mom would have to buy the generic stuff. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever had generic Pop-Tarts. They're basically cardboard with some kind of fake fruit filling in them. So I kind of lost my taste for Pop-Tarts at that time.
But some generic things are good.
Yeah, some are.
Like I know we're not in Michigan, but there's this store called Meijer there. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a Walmart, but better. And
what isn't?
And they have like their Meijer brand of food. And of it's better than like the... Original stuff. Some of it is not, though.
I had a pretty good Kroger pizza the other day.
Mm. Like peanut butter? Just stick with Jif.
Yeah. Well, Peter Pan, they're good, too.
Okay.
That's what we use.
Like, yeah.
None of these products are paying for us to pitch them.
So. But they can.
But if they like to sponsor the podcast,
email us at memo@journal.
The memo brought to you by Jif Peanut Butter. Okay. All right. Let's get on with the show, Lauren. Need to remind you that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods. Formerly known as Palmer's, the locally owned grocery store still offers high quality selection, great customer service, and low prices. Visit Shoppers Value Foods on East Main. Hey, let's welcome Zach Orsborn into the show. Hello, Zach. How's it going?
Hey, Brad. How are you?
Doing well, sir. We're going to talk about the rural internet issue.
Yes, it's going to be hard to say that word.
We're going to try to avoid it.
Over and over, but.
Rural. We could just say internet in the boonies.
There we go. That works for me.
Internet in the boonies. It's not easy to get good high quality fast speed internet out there, is it? You did a good story. Yeah. It was a Sunday's paper. Nice long story about that. I mean, it's a lot of people in Mississippi. 928,000 Mississippians without access to high speed internet. Of course, it's a largely rural state.
Yeah.
So that's a huge problem for us.
Yeah. A lot of people, especially in this area, still don't have it, even on the outskirts of Tupelo.
Yeah.
I interviewed Janice Milliken in Sherman, and she just started a nonprofit. It's called Bikers Against Diabetes in Northeast Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with being online, and she's trying to set up her website, get donations, email people, and she has... satellite internet called Exceed, and it's just way too slow. And she's tried to get AT&T to come out there, Max South, Comcast, and she just hasn't had any results yet.
Yeah, and you know, I saw a lot of comments on our Facebook page and our website on this story from people who said that, you know, they've called and tried to get companies like AT&T or whoever to expand out into the county areas, and they're just not going to do it. I don't know if it's just something that's not fiscally feasible for them from their perspective or what the reason is.
That's kind of a debate. Like, a lot of people don't really know the reason why. I guess I talked to Brendan Presley, and he said the ability to cover the cost of digging out old infrastructure and installing pricey required equipment, you know, kind of makes it less appealing for people to come out there. But still, it's like when I interviewed Janice, she had a mile away from her house is Enville Grocery, and they have AT&T box, and they have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And it's just a mile away, and she still can't. They still won't connect it out there because she lives on highway, on old highway, and, you know, there's not many houses on there. But
Well,
and internet's become like an essential thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Like now. Brandon Presley called it the electricity of the 21st century.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And You can go on.
He was talking about how when TVA first came to Tupelo, mm-hmm. how a lot of there were a lot of naysayers saying we don't really need electricity and stuff like that. And
we don't need light bulbs. We got these candles. We're going to put the candle makers out of business.
Just mainly because of the cost of everything. And it's pretty much what's happening today. And internet's pretty essential because right now, in 2009, the FCC Broadband Task Force reported that 70% of homework assignments by teachers required some use of internet.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. I'm sure that's even way more now since.
My kids have to do so many internet-based homework assignments, and like if our internet goes out, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
I mean, maybe go to the library where it's going to be, you're going to have to wait or something. I think we kind of take for granted living here, like in the city, like we do in Tupelo. I've got Comcast. I've had very few issues with it staying connected, and I can stream Netflix and watch videos and do whatever else at a pretty high rate of speed. And, I guess we just take it for granted. I haven't lived out outside of the city limits in years. Yeah. It was like pre-internet days is when I didn't live in a city. So
I almost have a mental breakdown if it buffers for like 2 minutes. I can't imagine.
What's that commercial I saw the other day with the husband and wife? And it says internet without 5 minutes, and it shows them just like freaking out. And then later on, internet without 27 minutes, and they're like just like
dead.
Just on the floor. Just totally,
mm-hmm. It's pretty bad.
It's something that we tend to, some people maybe, take for granted. So what can be done? What are they trying to do? What kind of efforts are being made to improve this situation?
Presley he's been working with some electric co-ops, and he's working with them to maybe the same electricity lines that run to houses could also be used to bring internet into the houses. And there's this group called Megapop. It's the Mississippi Economic Growth Alliance and Point of Presence. Mm-hmm. And they partnered with C Spire in 2005, and they've been building kind of cyber backbones to bring fiber into homes.
Yeah.
And for now, they built two backbones, and they're working on a third one, which is kind of eventually going to go out into more rural areas like outskirts of Aberdeen, Amory, Fulton, Iuka, and Corinth. And it's good that it's going to be in Fulton because in Itawamba County, only 35% of residents have access to high-speed internet.
Wow. Yeah.
So that's the lowest county in Northeast Mississippi with that number.
Wow. Hopefully this situation will improve, and maybe some of these companies can start serving people out outside of town limits and in these smaller communities. I'm just looking forward to the day where all they do is just put a chip in your head and you get Wi-Fi wherever you go.
Yes, that's going to be a great day.
That's my idea.
It's probably going to be in like 2 years.
Maybe I can patent that if I actually had any knowledge of how to create that sort of thing. Anyway, you can find this story in Sunday's Journal or at djournal.com. Zach, good stuff, man. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Be sure to look for the Two Sports Podcast we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself and Gene Phillips and Blake Morgan. Today's episode will be just Blake and myself because we have new episodes air every Wednesday. You can watch the webcast live around 11 a.m. at djournal.com or catch the replay later on. The podcast version will drop later on this afternoon. Listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. And Ole Miss and MSU fans, check out Double Coverage with Ole Miss beat reporter Paris Alford and MSU reporter Logan Lowry, releasing a new episode each Thursday afternoon or thereabouts, and they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to that for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com.
And we have Michaela Morris here today to talk about the 30th anniversary of the Women's Hospital.
I know, it's just kind of a happy baby story.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
When you think about it, nearly 70,000 babies born in that building.
Wow.
It's
two of them were mine.
Yeah. I added two to the total as well. And Chris.
Yeah.
It really is remarkable when you think about where they were in the mid-80s, mm-hmm. That maternity services were crammed into a corner of the hospital.
Wow.
They had to take laboring women up an elevator to labor and delivery so that Dr. White joked that the elevator was their sixth delivery room. that they delivered babies in that elevator.
Wow.
The admission clerk that I talked to actually talked about having one of her ladies that she was escorting upstairs had her water break on the way. So, but really, it was so cramped because they had 4 labor rooms, they had observation, and when that was full, you were in the lobby. And at that point was when it was in the middle of the changeover from all hospitals delivering babies and general practitioners delivering babies to OBs delivering babies. There was a real crisis in the mid-80s because of medical liability, and obstetricians were hit hardest by it.
Yeah.
So you had all these doctors who could no longer deliver babies, fewer hospitals with because you didn't have the ramping up of the obstetricians in across North Mississippi the way you do now.
Yeah.
So they were delivering babies from as far away as Holly Springs.
Wow.
You know, about, you know, more than 2,000 babies a year, which in this really tiny, when you think that they're averaging about 2,300 babies now at the women's hospital, where they have 16 labor and delivery rooms. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, it was a complete, most, up until the very end, dads weren't in the delivery room. You know, you were in these cramped spaces when you, after you delivered your baby, it was a roll of the dice whether you got even a semi-private room. So, and you might get stuck in a ward where just sheet, you know, curtains are separating you from 7 other women with newborns. Mm-hmm. And so it just had outgrown this, or outgrown the space they had. And their first choice was really to add on to the hospital. Mm-hmm. But because of essentially politics, and they ended up having to create this freestanding center out on Easton, which was the middle of nowhere in the 80s. You think about that stretch of Easton between Green and Gloucester being a fairly busy place, but there really wasn't much out there in the mid-80s.
Yeah.
It was the Appalachian Road. So they ended up with this freestanding center, and people loved it because they had, you could labor, deliver, and have your immediate recovery all in one nice room. Mm-hmm. When you went to the postpartum floor, you had your own private room. Mm-hmm. And so people thought they were heaven. And you know, they had nice big rooms for the nurseries. They were, in the few years after this opened, they were able to get a dedicated neonatologist. Up to that point, the pediatricians took care of those tiny sick babies. So you have this, the nexus of, or the seed that started a really high level neonatal intensive care. And Bill Hilbin, the retired pediatrician, really got choked up when he talked about babies in the mid-80s here that were born under 2 pounds. They just couldn't do anything for them. Mm-hmm. They were trying to rig adult ventilators to deliver oxygen. They didn't have the surfactant that helps babies take in the oxygen into their bloodstream. So that there were all these tools, and now they routinely resuscitate babies that are a pound.
Yes.
You know, that have a fighting chance to survive. And I mean, that just still gives me chills. Oh. So it's really,
it's,
I mean,
a huge impact on the community.
It is. Yeah. And I mean, when you think, this is one of the few things in life where you're really happy to go to the hospital.
Yes.
Insane. And then this hospital does more than just babies, although that's kind of their identity, is the baby hospital. With the gynecologic surgery, they've seen a tremendous growth in that, really, because both for the obstetrician gynecologists that do the surgeries, and then also having a dedicated staff that is really focused on women's health and doesn't have to do other things. So they, so being over by themselves has really helped them through the years have a laser focus mm-hmm. on women's health and, you know, things. And then also the medical technology in 30 years has just, you know, they don't do open procedures for hysterectomies generally anymore. They don't. So you're doing all these laparoscopic procedures, mm-hmm. either with the traditional instruments or with robots, assisted surgery. And so it really, really makes, I mean, women aren't in the hospital a whole 24 hours generally now after those things, which is also what made room, because when they built this, there were two separate wings with three halls each, and one was pretty much postpartum, and one was focused on GYN surgery. Well, as people went from spending a week in the hospital after a hysterectomy mm-hmm. to not even staying the night, they didn't need all that space on the GYN wing. So it when the they needed to consider where they wanted pediatrics to be, it was really a natural fit to slide the inpatient pediatrics wing mm-hmm. from the main unit over to women's. And so they've really ramped up those services by partnering with university, with some pediatric hospitalists. You've also seen a growth in what they do for women in high-risk pregnancies. They've had this maternal fetal medicine program come online mm-hmm. the last 2 years, and that has actually increased the number of admissions to the neonatal intensive care because women with any number of high-risk conditions where they know there's a birth defect, multiples, you mm-hmm. know, the placenta's in a bad place, any number of things. Yeah. They know those things are coming, so they're able to closely monitor those women mm-hmm. and then have the emergency crew effectively on board when that baby is born.
Yes.
So they're, you know, so they are rushed exactly where they need to be very quickly. So people who used to have to go spend the last month or 6 weeks of their pregnancy in Jackson
Memphis,
Birmingham, Jackson, mm-hmm. Tennessee,
can stay
closer to home.
Yes.
And it's really much easier on families.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and they've got, you know, the only thing that probably hasn't been touched except with paint has been the postpartum rooms. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things they've had their eyes on, how, especially with this mother baby care where the baby stays mostly with mom mm-hmm. during after birth, and they really don't go to the nursery except if mom isn't feeling well or if they need something more in depth than the heel sticks and normal examinations they get.
Mm-hmm.
They really need more room in those patient rooms, although figuring out how to move those walls will be a trick. But that's really the only place in the hospital that they haven't moved walls over the last 30 years.
Wow.
It's been a busy place.
Excellent. Well, I am personally glad that this is here in North Mississippi. I think this is an excellent thing for the community, and I'm glad to see that they're celebrating this 30th anniversary, and they're going to keep growing and expanding and keep on.
The babies will keep being born.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Well, thanks, Michaela.
You're welcome.
Hey, y'all need to be sure to check out this new program we've got 5 days a week called News Break. It's a morning news program, a video that goes up about 7 a.m. 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, at djournal.com. You can find it also on our Facebook page and on our YouTube channel. It's basically just about a 5-minute video recapping the top headlines from the journal and djournal.com, hosted by yours truly. So check that out 5 days a week at djournal.com. Time now for today's news memo, and for more on these stories, read the Daily Journal or visit djournal.com. Supporters of Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act hope recent actions by the powerful Mississippi State Medical Association bolsters their cause. The association recently adopted Resolution 12, which says the group supports expanding medical coverage as allowable under the Affordable Care Act to cover uninsured Mississippians under the age of 65. The phrase Medicaid expansion is not used in the resolution, but many believe the inference is clear. House Democratic leader David Beria, along with most of the state's Democrats, have been working for years to enact Medicaid expansion in Mississippi. Shane Spees, president and chief executive for Tupelo-based North Mississippi Health Services, said healthcare coverage is the common denominator among states that have seen improvements in healthcare access, health status, and outcomes. The state's Republican leaders, led by Governor Phil Bryant, Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves, and House Speaker Philip Gunn, have been adamant in their opposition to Medicaid expansion. Bryant has said the state can't afford to expand a program under the Affordable Care Act, which he hopes will be repealed and replaced with the election of a Republican president.
Tupelo city leaders are pressing forward to obtain hard numbers about how high costs could run for the removal of asbestos from a former motel on North Gloucester Street that is now empty and decaying. The 854 North Gloucester Street building once was a Ramada Inn and then a travel lodge for a few years until the business shut its doors in 2011. The Tupelo City Council declared the structure a menace to public health and safety in February. That move gives the city the authority to have the building torn down. It could try to recoup the demolition costs through a property lien. The last owner of the property was Raptor Hotels, a Mississippi company without estate ties that has since dissolved. The financial institution Comerica holds the lien on the property. City leaders will now request bids for the removal of asbestos from the property. City Attorney Ben Logan also said a sale of the property remains a possibility.
Enrollment has risen slightly or remained steady at three Northeast Mississippi colleges. Classes began just a week ago, but officials are already tallying the number of students on their campuses. Itawamba Community College's enrollment stands at 5,717, which is slightly higher than this time last year. ICC President Mike Eaton said enrollment is always a moving target early in the semester and that the school would have a better feel on it in a week or so. At Northeast Mississippi Community College, enrollment is about 3,544 students, almost identical to this time last year. President Ricky Ford said although he wishes enrollment was higher, he feels good about where Northeast stands. He also said that more than 50% of the community college's budget comes from student enrollment. Student numbers have yet to be determined at Blue Mountain College. Based on projections made during the summer, officials there expect the number to rise. The school launched a recruiting and improvement campaign called Grow BMC in the spring. Enrollment for public universities will be released after Labor Day by the Institutions of Higher Learning Board of Trustees.
The annual Live Well Community Health Fair will not be held this fall. The event brought together free flu shots, screenings, and wellness lessons for two decades. North Mississippi Medical Center has decided to discontinue the event, citing cuts at the Mississippi State Department of Health. The health department provided much of the personnel to give thousands of free shots each year. North Mississippi Medical Center is partnering with WTVA for a September 14th Senior Health Fair at the Bancorp South Conference Center in Tupelo. With assistance from the state health department, the hospital will provide 1,500 doses of flu vaccine free from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. The Live Well event typically featured 50 to 60 booths and would attract between 4,000 and 5,000 people to the Tupelo Furniture Market.
The fall is almost here, and that means football fans across Mississippi soon will be attending games at Ole Miss and Mississippi State. Just don't plan on bringing a backpack with you to the stadium. Both universities are prohibiting fans from taking large bags into their venues as an added security measure. Mississippi State is implementing a clear bag policy that calls for bags to be clear plastic or vinyl. It also will allow PVC bags smaller than 12 inches by 6 inches by 12 inches. Handheld clutch purses cannot be larger than 4.5 inches by 6.5 inches. MSU Director of Communications Sid Salter said the policy is the wave of the future and resembles the practice at NFL stadiums. Many SEC schools also have adopted similar policies. Salter acknowledged that the first couple of games will be a learning experience. At Ole Miss, fans will not be able to bring backpacks or any bag larger than 12 inches by 12 inches by 12 inches. They recommend the use of clear bags smaller than 8.5 inches by 11 inches to carry items into the stadium.
A Lee County-based organization is sending dozens of volunteers to the flood-ravaged areas of Louisiana to aid in the immediate recovery process. Hope Rains, which is the emergency response division of Tupelo-based Christian charity 8 Days of Hope, is pulling in volunteers from 20 states. They began arriving last week in Baton Rouge, where one subdivision of the state capital received more than 3 feet of rain in a 48-hour period.
Hope Rains director Chris Childs said that more than 60,000 homes were affected by the flooding. In areas where the waters have receded, around 70 volunteers head out in crews of 10 each day, helping homeowners restore and repair their homes. The work includes pulling up furniture, pulling up flooring, taking out drywall and insulation, and dealing with mold. Child said more volunteers are needed, and anyone wanting to help or donate to the relief effort can visit 8daysofhope.com and follow the Hope Rains link. Today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, a locally owned grocery store on East Main. The store recently changed its name from Palmer's, but the owners and the employees haven't changed. Damon Palmer and his brother Jason are the third-generation owners of the East Tupelo grocery store that was founded in 1957. The Palmer brothers have teamed up with last year's Grocery Wholesaler of the Year and decided to go with their Cost Plus program. The store now sells its groceries 10% over cost. That has allowed it to add more variety, especially in the meat, produce, and dairy departments. Along with the name change came a refreshing of the interior, new signs, and better parking. Visit Shoppers Value Foods for high-quality selection, great customer service, and low prices.
Let's go down to Jackson. Welcome in Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison to the show. Bobby, how's it going?
Hey, Brad. How you doing?
Doing well, sir. Are you enjoying the budget hearings down there in Jackson?
Well, there were 2 days of them, and they're over now, so I'm enjoying them more today than I did yesterday.
Well, I bet. Well, yesterday, Bobby, Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves had some questions for the State Health Department and some of their officials there. And, Bobby, seems to be kind of a disagreement on whether the State Health Department should have cut some programs and had made layoffs and other things. Tate Reeves thinks it wasn't necessary. Bobby, where seems to be the rub here? Because it seems like you just go to the math and figure out how much money they got, and they can't seem to do that.
Yeah, it was not just the health department, Brad. It was right. Actually more so mental health, but it was both of those agencies were kind of under the microscope to a large extent yesterday in terms of Lieutenant Governor Tate Reeves, who was kind of on a warpath. And this goes back to the legislative session when they made a dramatic change in how they direct revenue, where they stopped the process of agencies charging other agencies for services such as for rent or for, you know, the Attorney General's office supplies attorneys to each agency. And the Attorney General's office has always been paid for that service, but it is not paid anymore for that service. And then there's also these transfers of these special funds that these agency fees essentially that were levied for specific purposes. And they stopped all those practices. And mental health and the Department of Health said that they got substantial cuts because of those changes, and they had to make some cuts. And Governor Reeves was questioning that yesterday and saying they did. Saying they had more, maybe had more money than they said they were had. And it, the agency heads, Diana Bickla, mental health, and Dr. Mary Curia, who is a state health officer in charge of the Department of Health, they kind of held to their guns that the agencies were cut, and they had to make cuts to stay within the budget that the legislature appropriated.
Yeah. The Department of Mental Health, they had to eliminate some programs, including the units to treat males with drug and alcohol addiction. And Tate Reeves said something interesting to Diana Mikula, that she should be proud of her PR department and should give them a raise. But I think you already have, he said. I mean, he's kind of going after him.
He pointed out some substantial raise. What he said were substantial raises the Department of Mental Health has received over the past 4 or 5 years. And she responded the raises were all within the parameters of the guidelines of state law. It's probably the Department of Mental Health. I'm not sure about this, but I would venture a guess they probably have more employees than any other state agency because it's just such a labor intensive endeavor to take care of some of these people with mental health issues. Some in states of where they can't really take care of themselves to a large extent. And direct care workers, which they have 3,000 of them, when they're hired, they're hired at $16,000 a year. And after they're there for just a short while and receive their training, they bump up to $17,000, which is still not much money.
No,
so she said that was most of the raises. But then he pointed out that there were, I can't remember, Brad, now maybe 35.
35 employees that average about $20,000 per year. And then
received raises of averaging about $20,000 per year. And she said she was not sure what he was looking at, but she would said she was sure those were healthcare professionals like psychiatrists and doctors who were on staff. And, you know, the state has a hard time keeping those people because they can make so much in the private sector. So yeah, they had to kind of match that to keep them, she said. And she said that that's where those raises would have come in into play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was part of the working groups that Lieutenant Governor Reeves and House Speaker Philip Gunn created to look at all these the spending and taxing policies of the state, and maybe look to make some big changes in the 2017-2018 session. And this was their first real meeting where they kind of got into the meat and potatoes. But in a sense, they really didn't. They spent a lot of time just kind of talking about the budget for the current year that was passed during the 2016 session. And then Speaker Gunn asked a lot of questions just dealing with sort of real basics of state government. Like, he went into great detail about how this process, which is in state law, of how someone is committed to a state mental health facility, which, you know, it's a court process for someone to be committed. And he went into a lot of detail about how that process works. And so these were their first round of meetings where they really got into the nuts and bolts. And,
yeah,
and, you know, they did education on Monday.
They were talking about keeping graduates in state, weren't they?
Keeping graduates in state, and they're concerned about, which has been an ongoing concern for a number of years, pretty much going back as far as I can remember, which is the large amount of money, some say $30, $35 million that is spent for remedial courses for high school graduates, once they go to community college or senior college. You know, the argument has always been that you graduate from high school, you should be ready for your college classes. And Glenn Boyce, the commissioner of higher education, pointed out that, Mississippi has, which is not a bad thing, but has low college admission standards. So, which allows more people to get into college, which maybe is a good thing, especially if you can graduate them. But so that could account for some of the need for a high number of remedial courses. And somebody else pointed out that, a lot of these remedial courses are for people who are going back to community college after being out of school for a number of years. And I know if I went back to college and had to take college algebra, I would need all the remedial help I could get.
Yeah, me too. So this was the first set of budget of meetings with these working groups, Bobby. So they'll come back next month and work on some more stuff. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think the tax, which in a lot of people's eyes, the tax work group is going to look at the tax structure is the big one, and they're going to be. And I believe in early September.
All right. Well, good deal. Y'all can find Bobby's stuff in the Journal and at djournal.com. Thank you, Bobby.
All right, Brad. Appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. And speaking of Bobby Harrison, be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Bobby will provide commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. Watch live on Monday afternoons at 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. The 2016 legislative session's over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about the news coming out of the state capitol.
Well, we have Jenna Parsons here today to talk about the food section. Let's start with the cook of the week this week. She's from New Albany, Miss Christy Haney Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about what she made this week.
She made a banana pudding, a homemade banana pudding that you cook on the stove. And she was very specific in the ingredients. She said that you have to make it with Jackson vanilla wafers. They're not in a box. They come in a cellophane kind of package,
okay,
kind of a red, white, and blue bag. And you have to use that or it's not real banana pudding, she says. This is according to her mother, I believe, and was probably her grandmother's. But she lost her mom a couple of years ago, and her mom used to do Sunday dinners.
And she would
help. And she said she doesn't remember learning to make anything, but she learned to make everything.
Yeah.
And so now she has the Sunday dinners at her house, has about
great.
Seven or eight when they all gather together.
Mm-hmm.
She's a paralegal here in Tupelo, so she commutes every day.
Yeah,
just full of energy, young, mm-hmm, lots of fun. No children, but two Basset Hounds, Macy and Molly.
With the big, long, floppy ears. Oh, how cute.
Yes. So got to love the pet lovers.
Oh, that would be such an awesome family to grow up in. Having everybody over for dinner Sunday night and having everyone cooking. You know, I just feel like that's a really neat tradition that she has with her family.
So. My mom used to do Sunday dinner, but it was just for us. It was just mom and daddy and my sister and me. Yeah. And because my grandparents, one set had already passed when I was born. One set lived in Michigan. So there was no just popping over to Alabama for Sunday. So it was at the breakfast room table.
Yeah.
And sometimes it would be at 2 p.m. or 5 p.m. whenever she got everything ready. So I didn't grow up with that dinner at Mamaw's on Sunday that so many people in Northeast Mississippi have. Did you have that, Lauren?
No, we would have family, our immediate family. We'd try to make it a point to have dinner together, but yeah, we did never do like a everyone gather on Sunday. I think that's really neat, though.
Did you, Brian?
Well, we didn't always live next to my grandparents because we moved around a couple of times. But when we were there, we would, yes, often gather in whether it's Sunday or maybe some other day. But yeah, a lot of that. I mean, my immediate family, we always ate dinner, Sunday dinner, either at home or. You know, if it was a special Sunday, we'd go to Captain D's.
Captain D's.
Dad would splurge.
Oh, man. That's so funny. So, and your column is about the Midtown Supper Club.
Well, now defunct Midtown Supper Club. We used to meet, it was a group of people largely in Amory.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one member, Jim Dale Prince, who lived in Columbus, and so we would go there sometimes.
Okay.
And then we were in Tupelo, so we only hosted once. It would have been our time to host again when the club kind of dwindled. Jim moved, and one of the couples divorced, and another one of the members moved away also. So it ran its course. But when we hosted, we made pasta primavera because two of the members of the club were vegetarians.
Okay.
And a lot of times what the other members would do at the supper club is they would make like a pot of spaghetti and meatballs and then a pot of just red sauce so that there was something right for each.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided I just wasn't going to do that. I was going to make one dish and everybody was going to eat it.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's going to be good. I was going to eat it.
Jenna's rules.
I don't care.
So I did a pasta primavera, which is actually, I think it means spring vegetables, but you can serve it any time of year, but it's always good when the fresh vegetables are in season. And in this case, we have squash and onions, bell peppers. Now you have to get the asparagus and the broccoli from the grocery store because those aren't in season here right now.
Mm-hmm.
But you could make it with chicken. You could add shrimp to it.
Yeah.
But this was just purely vegetables. And I made a wonderful, no foolproof, you can't mess this up fruit tart in case I messed up the pasta primavera. But I didn't, and everything turned out very well. But this is, it's a really versatile dish. You can add whatever vegetables you want. You can use whatever kind of pasta you want.
Yeah.
I used fettuccine. You could use rotini or bow tie, just whatever you have on hand. It's good,
awesome.
And it's light. It's got a little cream in it, but the recipe serves a lot.
And it sounds like a good recipe for a lot of appealing to a lot of different people too.
Yeah, you could always pick out what you don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of you is it that doesn't eat asparagus? Brad.
Me.
Brad, you could pick out the asparagus.
Yeah. Don't like it.
Add it to the list.
I ate my broccoli and carrots and stuff last night like a champ.
Well, broccoli and carrots are in this dish.
Broccoli's okay.
Yeah.
If you cook it right.
Yes, if
don't like it steamed.
I do too.
Yeah.
If raw gives me indigestion, and if you overcook it and it's gray, I don't want to look at it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Bright green, that's the way to go.
I agree.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Jenna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, that's it. Catching more Pokemon during the show? Lauren?
No.
No? No more Pidgeys in the studio?
No.
Maybe we've eradicated them.
You scared him away, Brad.
Well, I hope so. Lauren, between interviews, was getting really angry at these Pokemon a while ago. I felt like she was really
so many. You know.
I thought she was like really angry at somebody for being a jerk, and she's like, "No, it's these
Pidgeys
and Yeah. Whatnot.
Drive me nuts.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to get on the Pokemon train.
That's okay.
Yeah.
It's no room for you anyway, Brad.
It's full, yeah.
It is full, isn't it? Man, I thought that craze would die down at some point. It probably will, but it hasn't yet, has it?
It's only been like a month.
Really?
A month and a half. Yeah, it came out like the second week of July.
It's been the story. It's kind of been the big thing this summer.
It's calmed down, though.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, at some point, you're going to catch all the Pokemon, then what?
I mean, it's really hard to catch them all, though.
Is it?
It's hard to keep them, though. Do they get away, and then you got to re-catch them?
Sometimes they run away from you while you're trying to catch them.
Those danged Pokemon.
So.
Is Pokemon plural for Pokemon?
Yep.
Not Pokemon?
Nope.
They're gender neutral?
It's pocket monsters.
What?
That's what it stands for. Pokemon? Pocket monsters?
Pocket monsters.
Yep.
Trivia of the day.
Weird. Well, I guess we've learned something today then. That's good.
Yep.
If nothing else, we know more about Pokemon / pocket monsters.
And SpongeBob?
And SpongeBob.
Mm-hmm. What's the latest plot line on SpongeBob?
I don't know. I haven't watched one in a couple of weeks. I'll just catch
sure
up when I can.
You haven't.
It's not like I have some on DVD. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now the kids are back in school. I don't get to watch that as much. That's too bad. Hey, I need to remind y'all that today's show is sponsored by Shoppers Value Foods, where you can get the ingredients for the recipes in today's food section. The Palmer brothers have worked hard on improving every area of the store to make customers' experiences even better than before and to save them money on quality name brand products. So visit the locally owned grocery store on East Main Street. You'll love the look, love the prices, and get helped by the same people you knew at Palmer's. And that's it for the show. Lauren Wood, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Good to hang out with you, as always.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Just bring you back in next time tomorrow.
Yeah,
Derek
absolutely.
Can stay home again, whatever he's doing.
Sounds like a plan to me.
Yeah. Hey, y'all can find us, by the way, on Twitter at DJournalMemo. Follow that for updates on when new shows drop, which, again, you can find those shows in iTunes, any of your podcast apps like Stitcher, Player.fm, Satchel, all those.
Google Play.
Google Play. Stream it online at memo.djournal.com. All these stories we talked about today you can find in your daily journal or at djournal.com. Follow us on Twitter at djournal now. Give our Facebook page a like, too. Get updates in your Facebook feed when you're goofing off at work. We know you are. And that's okay. I do it, too. Until Rod, I said that. Anyway, you can find me on Twitter at Brad Locke. Chris Kiefer's on Twitter at Chris Kiefer. Lauren's even on Twitter.
I am. I tweeted twice yesterday.
Yeah, one of them was about Michigan State. What a surprise.
Yeah, it's almost football season, so.
It is.
Lauren, was about
what?
The wasp in the newsroom.
Oh, yeah, the wasp in the newsroom.
Have we not talked about that yet?
Yeah, we totally forgot about that. We had a wasp in the newsroom yesterday. Caused a bit of kerfuffle for a few minutes. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, check out my Twitter.
We haven't given the handle yet.
I have photos of three different people trying to
including
hit.
Thomas Wells standing on the cubicles.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite was Adam, though, using the
monopod. Trying to smack.
At one point, Richard Crenshaw tries to throw a newspaper at it. It gets stuck. Somehow he gets the newspaper stuck between the light and the ceiling panel, which he could not have done if he tried 100 times. And eventually, Richard killed it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. He swatted it down
Richard
in the
advertising
department. So.
Anyway, you can see those photos at Wood Law, too.
Yeah, at WOODLAU, the number two.
Two.
Deuce. Deuce is out.
Bye.
The deuces.
Peace.
All right, good show, everybody. Ooh. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll be back on Thursday. So until then, have a good one.